Okay, good morning. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm sure I know many of you here from Highland Park Edison, and I have a long-standing, very special relationship with the Maze Yeshiva. I've watched it grow and develop over the years, and it's a pleasure for me to have an opportunity to address the student body about the topic of kashrus, which is something that is essential in all our lives. I was thinking, what is the most important message that I could deliver about kashrus? I could talk about kashrus for hours and probably for days, but what is important for you? What is it that I could communicate to you that would be the most important message? And I think that what I want to say to you is that kashrus is complicated, and it should not be taken for granted. When you go to the store and you buy a product, you should not assume, well, what's the big deal? As long as it seems to have some type of supervision, it's probably okay. That's not the case. Kashrus is very complicated. Products have to have supervision, and not every supervision is the same. There's different qualities of supervision. Some hashkachos are good, some are fair, some are poor, some are terrible, and you have to make sure that the hechsher, the supervision that you're relying on, is one that is trustworthy and is done by a competent organization. Oftentimes, we look at products, we read the ingredients on the label, and we try to make some kind of evaluation based on the ingredients of what's in a product. So I brought from the house, I picked out something from the Shalach Manis. It's some type of mini chocolate candy. And this product happens to have an OU, it's kosher. But I want to just talk about, theoretically, how many things could be treif in this little simple package of candies. In Yiddish, there's an expression that you could spell Noach with Zimmer Greisen. That means you could spell the word Noach with seven mistakes. I'm not exactly sure how you managed to do that, spell Noach with seven errors. But the concept is that if anything could go wrong, that would be like Noach with seven mistakes would be the ultimate. The question is, how many things possibly could be wrong with this candy? How many non-kosher ingredients could there possibly be in this product? Now, you probably know that there's a series of things that are considered to be, that the Torah says are not kosher. There are actually some non-kosher ingredients are biblically restricted, what we call an Issur D'oraisa, and some are rabbinically. So some of the Issurim D'oraisa would be non-kosher meat, non-kosher fish, non-kosher fowl, insects, basar b'chalav, meat and milk cooked together or mixed together. Blood is not kosher. Chalav, fats, even if it's a kosher animal, not kosher. Those are Isurim d'oraisa. Isurim d'rabanan would be, for example, chalav akum, milk that was not properly supervised. And in America, we many people drink regular milk, and that's not because there's no concern of chalav akum. It's because Rav Moshe Feinstein was of the opinion that having inspections, government inspections in a plant, is tantamount to having supervision. But if you go to a third world country where they don't have government, like if you go to a place like the Dominican Republic, which I once visited, which looks like a bombed out area, it's a lawless country, the milk there would be chalav akum. There's an issue, an issur d'rabanan of bishul akum, food that was prepared by a non-Jew under certain circumstances, gevinas akum, cheeses that were not done under proper supervision. Israeli produce requires separation of truma meiser in order to eat the food. So those are some of the issurim d'rabanan, some of the rabbinic prohibitions. So if I would ask you, how many of these potential, how many of these Isurim d'Oraisa and Isurim d'Rabbanan would there be in a simple candy like this? Now, if you look at the label on the candy, so the ingredients are sugar, 100% pure vegetable oil, monodiglycerides, whey, milk chocolate, artificial flavor, artificial color, and vitamin D. So it looks like a pretty innocuous group of ingredients. It's unlikely. There's no animals in here. There's no fish. There's no insects. It appears as if it's unlikely that there's anything wrong with this product. But the truth is that I could show you that almost every single non-kosher category that I just talked about a few moments ago, it's possible to have, I mean, the fact is that it's not because this was made under Hashgacha, but it's possible for these candies to have almost every single category of non-kosher ingredients. And the key to understanding this is the fact that when you analyze ingredients are units that are composed of subunits, so that you can have an ingredient that it appears to be okay, but then you have to figure out how the ingredient was produced, how was it manufactured, and you have to break down the ingredient. It's like, I'm sure you're learning in chemistry that all matter is made of molecules, and the molecules are made of atoms, and the atoms are made of protons, neutrons, and electrons. So when you drill down, you break it down to its basic components. And the same thing is true when you look at food in terms of whether it's kosher. You have to consider, how is the food put together? How do they make the food item, and what is contained in the item? So I'm going to go through the ingredients that I just mentioned before on the label and show you how, when you study how the ingredients are put together, then it's possible to have numerous potential non-kosher ingredients. Now, the first thing I want to talk about is the flavor. Well, a very large percentage of foods today have flavor. Some flavors will say natural flavor. Sometimes they'll say artificial flavor. And when you see the word flavor on the label, it doesn't tell us very much. It just says flavor. The truth is that flavors could be made of 50 ingredients, 100 ingredients, 200 ingredients could go into a flavor. The food manufacturers do not want to write on the label what's in the flavor for two reasons. First of all, there would not be enough space on the label to list all the ingredients in a flavor. And secondly, if people would know what's in the flavor, they wouldn't eat the product, because ingredients and flavors have mysterious sounding names, and it would scare away the public. So I brought in a copy, which I'm not going to read it exactly the way it's written, because formulas are proprietary. But I'm going to read to you a typical ingredient list that goes into making up of a flavor. So again, let's imagine that the flavor that's in this candy, the artificial chocolate flavor, here's some of the ingredients that you may find in this flavor: vanillin, ethyl vanillin, heliotropine, diacetyl, butyric acid, ethyl butyrate, acetone, methyl heptine carbonate, gamma actylactone, gamma decalactone, butyryl lactate, aldehyde C18, acetic acid, artificial buttermilk flavor, artificial cheese flavor. Does anybody here know what all those ingredients are? I doubt it. So here you have a typical flavor that's made up of all sorts of strange sounding words. Now, there's a number of ingredients that are commonly used in flavors. One, and I'm sure this will come as a surprise to you. One ingredient is called castoreum. Castoreum is a flavor enhancer. It's like MSG. MSG, you use monosodium glutamate, you use to bring out the flavor. You put it on a steak and it makes it tastier. It doesn't have its own taste, but it brings out the flavor. So castoreum is a flavor enhancer. Castoreum is a beaver extract. It comes from beavers. Civet is another flavor enhancer. Civet comes from a cat. It's known as a civet cat, a certain type of cat mammal. Then you can have in the flavor fusel oil. Fusel oil is an extract from either wine or grape juice, which is another item that I forgot to mention, that if it's not properly prepared, would be prohibited midrabbanan on a rabbinic level. Then you have enzymes that could go into a flavor. Enzymes are used oftentimes to modify the taste. The enzymes will help. It's also like a flavor. It could be like a flavor enhancer. It'll make a taste sharper or more distinct. Now, enzymes are, you're probably familiar with enzymes from your biology classes, your chemistry classes. Enzymes are chemicals that speed up reactions in different items. And one of the ways that they produce enzymes today is they grow microbes in factories, and the microbes secrete enzymes, and then they're able to harvest the enzymes and use them in food production. Now, because the microbes are living organisms, the microbes need food. So the microbes have to grow on food substances. And the scientists have found that if you alter the food, which we call the medium that the microbes grow on, then the enzyme is altered as well. So scientists have experimented with just about every food combination in the world to discover and manufacture different types of enzymes. So it's possible, for example, that an enzyme could be grown on blood, or an enzyme could be grown on monkey tissue, or you could have an enzyme that's grown on a mixture of milk and meat, which would be basar v'chalav. It could be grown on dog flesh. It could be grown on anything, enzyme. So it's possible, again, in the flavor that's used in this candy, you might have any of those ingredients. You may have a lemon oil that goes into the flavor. Now, the lemon oil could be a product of Israel. If it's coming from Israel, then there's an issue of trumas and maisers, that you have to separate the truma and maiser in order, and if it's not taken care of, then you're not allowed to eat the food item. Many flavors come in powdered forms. And powders, how do companies change liquids into powders? What they do is they have a huge machine, could be two or three stories tall. It's called the spray dryer. And the spray dryer, what it does is it sprays out the liquid into this huge chamber, and then there's a furnace nearby, and it blows hot air into the furnace, and the hot air evaporates the liquid, and you're left with the powder. And a spray dryer, if it's not under hashgacha, the spray dryer could be used for all sorts of non-kosher items. So it could be used for a chicken flavor, which in other words, it'd have a mixture of chicken in it. It could have oyster flavor. It could have the eel fish that was cooked in the spray dryer. It could have virtually any type of non-kosher food, so that the spray dryer, if it's not properly kosher, it would be treif. It's like if you use a pot at home. If somebody brought into your house a piece of ham and cooked it in a pot, the pot becomes treif. Then if you cook food in the pot, the food becomes treif, because the taste of the ham goes into the pot, and then it goes from the pot into the kosher food. So the flavor could have in it, could absorb the non-kosher, all these non-kosher flavors. Then you have, okay, so that's the flavor. So just the flavor alone already presents a whole series of potential non-kosher ingredients. Do you have a question? Yeah, the flavor that you could use is a flavor that's done under hashgacha. It has to be, whenever you see the word flavor on a product, that's a red flag. If it says flavor, it means that it needs to be produced under hashgacha. Because if with hashgacha, all these things could be controlled. But without hashgacha, there's no way to know what's in the flavor. Okay, then you have on the label vegetable oil. So it says, on this label, it says 100% pure vegetable oil. So you would assume that 100% pure vegetable oil means that there's no other, you know, there's kosher oil would be a vegetable. Non-kosher oil comes from animals. So, for example, tallow means oil that comes from an animal is tallow, or it could be lard, so comes from a pig. So if it says 100% pure vegetable oil, if it just says vegetable oil, so you don't know, but if it says 100% pure, 100% pure is pure vegetable oil. So what could be wrong with 100% pure vegetable oil? So the fact is that the government allows a company to write on the label 100% pure vegetable oil, even though there is animal oil mixed into the product, to the extent that you can have up to 5% non-kosher animal oil, tallow or lard, in the vegetable oil and still call it 100% pure vegetable oil. Now, you know that in halacha, if you mix something non-kosher together with something kosher, if the ratio is a certain amount, then it's bottled, it's nullified. Who knows what the ratio is? Shishim. Shishim is 1/60. So what percentage is 1/60? Mathematicians here. What percentage? You don't have your calculators? 1.666% would be shishim. So 5% is much greater than 1 part in 60. So if you have 5% of a product is animal oil, then the non-kosher is not bottled in the kosher. Now, why would companies mix non-kosher oil if they're making vegetable oil? Why would they mix in animal oil? So the reason is because companies have what's called rework, where if they make a product and the product doesn't come out well, let's say they send out product in containers and the truck driver is not careful and he bounces around a bunch of boxes with the oil, and the containers get smashed up. So they can't sell it that way in the supermarket. So he brings it back to the factory, and then they don't want to throw away, they can't sell it that way, but they don't want to throw it away, so they take the oil out of the containers, and then they reintroduce it into the system once again. So if they happen to be making vegetable oil, and they have animal oil, and the taste is basically exactly the same, so they could take, that's called rework. You take the animal oil and you rework it into the kosher oil. I once got a call, if you think that this is far-fetched, I once got a call from a mashkiach in one of our, I work for the OU, in the OU plant, and it was a plant that does kosher and non-kosher oils, and whenever we did hashgacha there, we had a mashkiach tamidi. We had a full-time mashkiach who stood there and watched the production. So this particular mashkiach called me up and he said that he's standing in the plant supervising OU products. And, you know, in the plants they have different production lines. They make product on belts and production lines. So they could have like a whole series of production lines going simultaneously. So he said next to the OU line was another line where they were making oil with a different rabbi's symbol. And that rabbi was not very competent. The rabbi was not there for the production. And he said that he's watching them rework animal oil into the vegetable oil. And there's nothing he could do because it's not his hashkacha, but they're taking the rework, the animal oil, and putting it into the vegetable oil. So vegetable oil could have, even though it's, now, if it says 100% pure vegetable oil, you would think, well, you're not allowed to do it. You can't say it's pure if it has animal oil. But that's not true because the government has its own way of defining terms. And when you write 100% pure vegetable oil, it doesn't necessarily mean that the vegetable oil, that it's pure as far as that it's only vegetable oil. It just means that it's pure. So it means that there's no artificial ingredients. So as long as there's nothing artificial, it's 100% pure. So it's 100% pure, but it's not 100% pure vegetable oil, even though that's how it sounds when you read it. The government laws have their own logic. You could have natural butter flavor spray that's parv. How could you have natural butter flavor that's parv? Because it doesn't mean that the butter is natural. It just means that the flavor is natural, that you use natural ingredients to make the flavor, but it could be there's no butter in the natural butter flavor. So the fact that it says 100% pure vegetable oil does not mean necessarily that it's just vegetable oil.